You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
Talking about food today and food in the kitchen. I mean, we got like one of the great authorities in Louisiana. This is the guy who's the columnist for the food columnist for Louisiana Life magazine. He has a column in every issue. What credentials? He's a military guy. He has all these medals on, I guess, for what he's done. He's written for Food and Wine magazine, Travel and Leisure, the New York Times Book Review, Diverge. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. And just written a lot of things. And then a few years ago, he did a book through the effort of Louisiana Life called The Essential Louisiana Cookbook. And it's really a great book. And I just checked with the girl up front. There's only a few left, all right? And so we'll say this to you. If you'd like to order it, I recommend it. It's got beautiful photography. Usually you'll love our food photography. And then Stanley's narration research, you can't beat this. If you want to call the company, 504-830-7231, 504-830-7231. And she'll make you a deal. They'll knock off a few dollars. I think it's going to be like $15 or something. But if you call the office, and then they can order through here and get it. It's worth it. I usually don't do pitches like this. it's a fine book, and anyway, it's called The Essential Louisiana Cookbook, and the recipes from Stanley Dry, and beautiful photography with using the Yule. All right, let's talk about the summer, and to get into this, as we're getting ready, you live in New Iberia, so you were telling me about your garden this summer. So how does your garden grow? What do you have?
Well, I have tomatoes and cucumbers. I have snap beans and okra, some eggplant, and some different herbs. A lot of basil and parsley and chives and things like that.
Now, what kind of tomatoes do you grow?
You know, well, I used to try to grow the big tomatoes. I love the big, red tomatoes, but I had so much trouble with bugs, and particularly with stink bugs. And I don't use any pesticides. And I just had summer after summer stink bugs come in and just ruin the whole crop. So I just quit growing the big ones, and I grow little cherry grape tomatoes now.
Okay.
I've been growing two kinds. One is called Matt's Wild Cherry, which is a red tomato, and the other one is called Coyote, which is a yellow tomato. And both of them are wild tomatoes that people found growing wild in Mexico and saved the seeds, and they're indeterminate, so they just grow and grow and grow, and they produce a ton of tomatoes. The bugs don't really seem to bother them. The birds sometimes will eat a few. But they have a long season, and one year when they'll produce up until a frost, and one year when we didn't have a freeze, I had tomatoes all winter from those vines.
And they're great tomatoes. I mean, it's a little thing you can just go and pick them and off the bush and eat them. Huh?
Yeah, they're delicious, and kids love them. Boy, kids eat them like candy. Mm-hmm. They're really good tomatoes, and we like them a lot. We eat them in salads, and we'll make a little pasta dish. We'll cook some pasta. Usually we use orzo, the rice shaped pasta, and we take a bunch of those little tomatoes, put them in a big bowl, and kind of mash them up to get the juice out. And a little bit of garlic, and a lot of basil and olive oil, and then put the hot orzo in there and toss it all together and season it with salt and pepper and Parmesan. And it's a really nice, nice summer dish.
Man, that sounds good. I feel like something that calls for a glass of chilled white wine on the side.
That's right. You got to have that.
What type of wine would you use for that usually?
Just some type of simple white wine would be good. Yeah. Sauvignon Blanc would be good. Yeah.
Have you ever dealt with the Creole tomato?
I've tried to grow them, Errol, in the past when I was trying to grow big tomatoes, and like I say, I just had so much trouble with the bugs that I just quit trying to grow them.
Okay. Something else you mentioned in your garden, which I think is an amazing food, probably at least to me one of the most versatile, maybe the most versatile food that there is. That's an eggplant.
I love eggplant. These that I grow are it's the Asian type, the thin eggplant. This is an heirloom eggplant from Taiwan.
Is it purple or green?
It's purple. Purple, and it grows, you know, it grows long and thin, and it's a delicious eggplant.
And how do you need to cook those? I mean, you wouldn't eat those raw.
No.
How do you usually eat them?
Well, I usually fry them up in some olive oil. We did something the other night. I had some peppers and some eggplant and a little bit of okra, and I just cut them all up and fried them with olive oil and some garlic mixed all together, and it was really good. Nice little tomato stew there.
Now okra, of course, people associate it first thing with gumbo. I assume you have other uses for it. Some people don't like okra because of the texture. They kind of feels kind of strange to them.
Yeah, I've never understood that. It's one of my favorite vegetables. And, you know, people who don't like it usually say, oh, it's slimy and I don't like that, you know. If you cook it correctly, it doesn't get that kind of texture that people don't like. But I love it. I love it. The ones I grow is a red burgundy okra. So the okra is a burgundy color instead of green. And then when you cook it, it turns green. And it's a delicious okra.
How do you prepare your soil? Do you have any kind of special soil that you use?
Well, I do, because I don't really have a place to do a garden in the ground. I do everything in pots. I have everything in pots. I use potting mixtures for the pots, and these are ones I've been using for years. So they work. A lot of things work very well in pots. The only thing is you have to water them a lot, you know, particularly now with the kind of heat we're having now. You basically have to water them every day.
Yeah. So if I go out to your garden, would I see just a whole bunch of pots?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. It is. It's an old dog kennel, pretty big dog kennel. It's not used anymore. So I have all the pots inside the chain link fence, you know. And the things like cucumbers and beans that need something these tomatoes that need something to grow on, they just grow on the fence. And it works out very, very well.
Now you mentioned cucumbers. In this issue here, you have a recipe for whole cucumber and dill soup. That sounds good.
Right there. That is good. It's very refreshing in the summer on a hot day. It's a very refreshing soup. And it's very simple to make.
Do you grow your own dill?
You know, I've never had much luck with dill. I've tried to grow it. In fact, I planted some this year, and it didn't even germinate. And that's been my experience. I haven't been able to grow it.
And if you're doing cucumbers, do you make pickles also?
I don't know. We eat them fresh. We just eat them fresh.
All right. So what is... Is salads your ideal for a summer meal?
Well, I love salad, and we eat a lot of salads, particularly at lunch, and put all kinds of things in them. But I love seafood, so I love having any kind of seafood.
You know, we'll get to seafood. Let me ask you about the type of lettuce. I know there's 20 recipes. You have romaine. Another recipe you use, arugula. Any favorite among those?
I like arugula a lot. In fact, I grow arugula not in the summer because it's tough to grow it in the heat, but in the cooler months, I almost always grow some arugula, and I'm very fond of that. But we use a lot these mixed greens that you can get in the store, you know, that a variety of different lettuces, and I think that's nice because it gives you a lot of variety, a lot of texture, different colors.
So your recipe, it's a salad of arugula and shaved Parmesan. Now I'm going to assume you don't make your own Parmesan there, but
no,
that sounds good.
It is good. It's very good. It's a nice salad.
And it has balsamic vinegar and all that. I've never understood what balsamic vinegar brings to the table. Is it kind of a tartness or?
There's a tartness and a little sweetness behind it. So you have with this salad, the arugula has kind of a bitter finish to it, which makes some people not like it. So the balsamic vinegar plays off against that very nicely, I think.
Now, you also have a beet salad. Do you grow beets also?
No, I don't have any beets. It's more of a winter crop, but I haven't grown any beets.
All right. I've never even seen a raw beet. I mean, I've always seen the beet out of the can, which I assume is some kind of process to soften up. Is a raw beet really hard at that point? You need to do something to it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And the greens are very good on a raw beet. The greens are very good too. Beet greens are delicious. So you generally with beets, you'll boil them first and then do something with them, you know.
Well, let's talk about seafood. And there's when we talk about the summer, usually there are two things that come to mind: crabs and shrimp. Before the show, you were talking about being in the Vietnamese restaurant in Harvey over in Jefferson Parish, and tell them about the dish you had there.
It was a fabulous, it was called salt and pepper crab, and they were blue crabs that, as I understand it, they boil them first, and then they deep fry them, and then they cut them up, and they cook them in a wok with different seasonings and peppers and everything, and I tell you, they were just absolutely fabulous.
So they boil them first, take the claws off, and then and I guess what cut them apart? And then cook them in
As I understand it, I don't quite understand this step, but as I understand it, they boil them first, and then they go in the deep fryer for a little bit. And then they take them out and cut them up, and then cook them in the wok with different seasonings. It's just a fabulous dish. I had never had it before, but it's absolutely wonderful.
Now, when you started, were these soft shell crabs?
No, these are hard shell crabs.
Hard shell, okay. And so, with the process, it kind of loosens them up, and then.
Well, I'm not real clear about the process, but.
Well, how do you eat them? Okay, when you eat them, I mean, do you get your fork and you need to kind of?
Oh no, you have to eat them. It's a messy dish. You have to eat them with your fingers. You know, in fact, they give you bibs to eat them.
It's one of those kind of dishes.
Yeah, yeah, but they're really delicious.
Yeah, speaking of soft shell crabs, to me, that's one of the great dishes. I mean, it's a wonderful dish when done right.
It is. It's one of my favorite things too. I just love them. I've had some good ones already this summer.
Now, what's the best season for them?
Oh, I think the summer is the best season. I think, particularly as you get later in the summer, I think you get even more of them. But I think this is the prime time for them. They've been showing up. They've been showing up here and there. Usually mostly what you see in the restaurants are deep fried soft shell crabs, battered deep fried soft shell crabs that when they're done right, they're really delicious. In fact, I had some a while back. I had some like that at Mandina's that were just spectacular. But when I cook them, I don't do much deep frying. When I cook them, I flour them and saute them in butter. Right. And then make a little pan sauce with some white wine for them. And the other way that I really like them is when they're grilled. Get a hot grill and baste them with a melted butter and lemon juice and Tabasco and cook them on the grill. And they are really excellent that way.
Now, some people don't know scientifically exactly what a soft shell crab is, all right? That's a crab that has molted, right? I mean, it's got out of its shell.
Right.
Which they do. They do it once every year at a certain season? Or
They do it. I think they do it more than, I'm not sure how many times, but I think they do it more than once a year. They do it periodically, but I don't know the timing on it.
Okay. And they do that just because it's time to move on. They need more room. They need to expand.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And then they have to, you have to catch them in between, because pretty soon they start putting on a hard shell again. So it's a matter of getting them in between the shedding and making the new shell. That's why they tend to be pretty expensive, because it's kind of a difficult thing to do.
I wonder how long the time is between getting out of their hard shell and then starting to develop a new hard shell.
I don't think it's very much time, Errol. I think that, there's some people who have setups where they monitor them and a lady was telling me they used to do that down at Sycamore Point. They had these tanks and everything, but she said she just quit doing it because she'd have to stay up all night, to catch the crabs at the right time.
So it could be that fast. It could be like within a day.
Or less than that, I think. Yeah, I think it's very fast. Yeah. And then sometimes people catch them in crab traps, and sometimes shrimpers pull them up in nets. But it's a real treat whenever you can get a soft shell crab is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So when we're talking about crabs in Louisiana, we're talking about what I call the Lake Pontchartrain blue crabs. That's pretty
crabs,
much
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, blue crabs.
And is that right. Do you get that across the state, like in the Lafayette area and in the Gulf and all that, or is it just?
Oh yeah, all across the Gulf. Uh huh. In fact, so many of our crabs now. The Chesapeake used to be a great source of crabs, but over the years, with pollution and agricultural runoff and so on and so forth, they just don't produce the crabs that they used to. And we send a huge amount of our crab catch down here up to the Chesapeake. I forget what the figures are, but I think it's something like 70 or 75% of our crabs go up to the Chesapeake. But we were in Baltimore some years back. Alex has a son and his family who live up there, and we went to this little place and ate steamed crabs, and they were just huge crabs. They were like those big freshwater crabs that occasionally we get, but you don't find them very often. And so I told the guy, I said, "These are delicious crabs." I said, "Where are they from?" He said, "Lake Pontchartrain." So we went to Baltimore to eat Louisiana crabs.
and that drives up the price for us, which to me is one reason why people eat more crawfish. Like when the crabs started getting really expensive, people said, "I can't afford that. How about some crawfish?"
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Because they're really crab meat, like lump crab meat, jumbo lump crab meat, is just cost a fortune now. But I think that's one of the big reasons.
Did you ever try the crab meat maison at Galatoire's?
No, I don't think I've ever had that, Errol.
Okay. It's one of the signature dishes. I mean, more an appetizer. And it's beautiful crab meat just mixed with mayonnaise and a little, maybe a little lemon juice. And it's just wonderful. I mean, it's just
Oh yeah, I'd love to have that.
expensive because it's filled with
Sure.
it's filled with crab meat. But anyway, you ever just eat a plain old boiled crab just sitting down and raising
Oh
it and
yeah, we had some last weekend. We had boiled crabs. They were delicious. I love them.
you boil the would you boil a crab the same way you boil crawfish? The same
It's the same, pretty much the same. Yeah, same kind of seasonings and everything. Some people steam them, but boiling is good also. So, but it's basically the same.
Well, just a little bit more of a workout, just kind of opening it up and cracking all that. Does it make any difference to you between the male and the female crabs when eating boiled crabs?
Well, the female crabs, with the female crabs, you'll oftentimes get some roe, which is that orange roe, which is very, very good.
Okay.
So.
And shrimp. Okay, between the brown shrimp and the white shrimp, the different kinds of shrimps, what's the best? Are they all the same?
Well, I don't know. There may be a difference, but it's never been clear in my mind what the difference is. I've had both, and they've both been very good. So I'm not clear on that myself.
So in the summer, how would you most often eat shrimp?
Well, we like to boil them, and sometimes we use them in different dishes. In fact, I made a soup last night. They used both shrimp and red snapper in it. And then of course gumbo is one of the best ways to cook shrimp. Shrimp and okra gumbo is.
Shrimp and red snapper in the soup.
Yeah, it was good. It was a and a lot of vegetables. It's a They call it tom yum. It's the, I the, You can buy these jars of this mixture, this paste called tom yum, TOM and then YUM. From the ones I get are from Thailand, and they use them as a base for making soups. And it's really it's got it's kind of a hot and so gives you kind of a hot and sour soup, and it's really good if you want something quick. I just cut up a lot of different kinds of vegetables and put them in the pot and put in some shrimp, cut the shrimp in half and put those in and put in some cut up some snapper or fish, whatever you got, and put in there, and then cover it with chicken stock and add this tom yum paste, and you boil it up, and you've got a delicious soup.
Well, it sounds good. And you make it sound so simple, but it's just a
Well, it is. It is. That it's a. It, I mean, you can put together a meal in no time with that.
Do you still bake?
I do. Not as much in the summer, but yeah, I love to bake.
I was just thinking with that soup, eating that soup and having a nice hot loaf of bread right there and kind of dipping in there.
Oh yeah.
It's like a It's like a real good dipping soup.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's also good with croutons. I love to bake bread, and I love to bake all kinds of things.
Let's talk about fruits. What are some of the best that Louisiana provides during that time of the year?
Well, we have figs. Some figs. Some people have figs now, or the fig tree we have. We usually start getting them right around July 4th. Ours are not ready yet, but some people are getting them depending on the varieties that they're growing. And then we've got right now we've got blueberries and blackberries around this time, and What else do we have right now? Those are the main ones that come to mind.
I got to tell you, fig trees, they tease me every year, all right? And they've been the biggest one. But like, when we first moved a long time ago to our house, we kind of inherited a fig tree. And that tree was like a factory. I mean, it just produced like thousands of figs. It's all in July, all right? But then with storms and moving and everything else, we have a tree we planted, and it ain't doing nothing, okay? I mean, like every year, it looks like it could do something. It's, oh, the leaves are out. And then you get those little green fig buds. So you see the fig buds. And if you see them by June, you say, well, look, if it's not ready by June, by July 4th, it should be a nice ripe fig. But it never makes that last step anymore.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
What's the name?
Probably me. Yeah. And I mean, that's good. I mean, when you get those big ripe figs and you can go and pick them and
Oh, I just love them. I love them. I just love to eat them right off the tree.
Yeah. I always thought one of nature's tricks, though, against humans is that it made the figs ripe around July 4th, which is like the hottest time of the year. So if you want to preserve them, you got to go inside. You got to boil water, a big pot of boiled water at the hottest time of the year, and then cook the figs.
Right.
And then the part where you do the canning, okay, where you got to boil the jars.
Right, right.
Boil figs and boil jars.
At the hottest time of the year.
Yeah, the hottest time of the year. But in the end, it's if in September it's been in your refrigerator and nice and chilled, they're really good.
They are good. I used to can figs every year, but I just reached the point where I said, well, my canning days are over. I don't do that anymore. I just eat them fresh.
Well, I gotta say, our refrigerator at this moment has a jar of preserved figs, but they were bought at Mona's, which is a Middle Eastern store. Okay, no telling where those figs grew. I mean, it could have grown like a rock or somewhere. It was really good. So, do you have any recommended dessert then?
Well, I'll tell you what I made. What I made recently, and we just absolutely loved it. It was not my recipe. It was in a book by Diana Henry, who's a British writer and cook. It's an upside down apricot cake, and I've never really gotten apricots in the store that are just terrific to eat, raw. But cooking them with this cake, they were really delicious. There's a lot of caramel and the apricots and some almond flour in the cake. That was really nice. I've been making ice cream recently a good bit. I made recently some mocha ice cream. And I made some, we had apricots. I made some apricot ice cream I made some persimmon ice cream.
Persimmon ice cream?
Yeah, which was delicious. Because what I do, when the persimmons are ripe in September, we don't have a tree, but near New Iberia in Koto, there's one of those pick-your-own orchards. And they have a lot of different fruits, and they have a lot of persimmons. So we'll go in September and pick a bunch of persimmons, and then put the pulp in freezer bags and freeze it. And then you've got it, during the year if you want to make a sorbet or an ice cream or whatever you want to do with it. And I still had one bag left in the freezer, so I made some persimmon ice cream. It was really very good.
Man, well, I can't say I've eaten persimmons very much. It's a kind of a bittersweet kind of taste to it.
Well, I mean, they're really sweet. They're very, very sweet. Of course, it depends on the varieties. The ones I use for ice creams and things. Or the soft persimmons, that are they're very soft and they're very, very sweet. And then there's another type of persimmon that you eat like an apple when it's firm. You know, that's what's that called? A fruyu persimmon, I think, which is also very good, but it's just a it's a different type of persimmon. I had I was in China back in the mid 80s and went to a zoo, and there was a snack bar there, and they had frozen whole persimmons on a stick, and you just ate. It's like a popsicle, you know. You ate the frozen persimmon just like you were eating a popsicle or something, and they were just great. So sometimes we'll freeze some whole persimmons, and then you can, you know, you can have them later, and they're good.
Wow. I just reminded as a quick aside, many years ago, I was with some friends out on the Canal Street, New York, and waiting for a parade. It was obviously the morning time. And there was a vendor, and they kept on saying, I thought, with abalone steak. Abalone steak. And I'm thinking, oh, abalone steak. First of all, you don't have any abalone here and all this. But I thought, obviously, I'm hearing wrong. But then my friend says, she's saying abalone steak? I said, yeah. So let me go with it. And I said, excuse me, are you saying abalone steak? I said, what? I said, abalone steak? I said, no, apple on a stick.
Apple on a stick.
which is a whole different thing right there. But anyway, one last element of outside dining, grilling. You do a lot of grilling?
We do. We do a lot of grilling this time of year. Yeah. Yeah. We have a... we have a gas grill, and I have a small charcoal grill also. Mm-hmm. So depending upon how energetic I am, I might use one or the other. But this is a great time to grill.
Yeah. Well, that with one of your salads waiting, and then a bowl of persimmon ice cream. That's like a good way to spend.
Yeah, that would be a nice dinner.
spend the time. Okay. Before we go, Stanley, just. In your area of the country, in New Iberia and the Cajun country, anything new going on from the culinary scene? Any kind of thing that people are starting to grow or to eat, or any exciting restaurants or anything?
I don't eat out that much, Errol. So I'm not I'm not really current on the restaurant scene. But there's a lot of you know, this time of year, there's an awful lot of seafood being cooked, an awful lot of fried seafood and boiled seafood also. I guess it was last week or the week before, I got some takeout, some fried shrimp from a place here in New Iberia, and I saw they were still serving crawfish, which I was surprised at. It's pretty late. They said, "Yeah, we're still getting crawfish from the ponds." So,
wow.
It's usually not around this time of year unless they're getting it from the basin. But they said this was still coming from the ponds.
Yeah, I mean, usually at least by July, this should be done.
Yeah,
a good measure. When the figs turn ripe, the crawfish shells get hard.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
right. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
that's if the figs turn ripe. Okay.
If they're ripe.
Anyway, Stanley, as always, has been delightful. I want to remind people listening about the book, The Essential Louisiana Cookbook. You can get it from you can probably get it if you hunt websites, that sort of thing, but also from our office, 504-830-7231. Ask for the Stanley Fry book. So, Stanley, it's been delightful.
Well, thank you, Al. I always enjoy this.
And all you folks, when you get Louisiana Life, he's there every issue, and he has a great column. So it's one of the good things we have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Errol.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.